Welcome to the Mike Malloy Show. Brad Friedman of BradBlog.com in one more night for Mike Malloy. We are covering the president's speech right now. He's speaking at the in the East Room of the White House concerning the debt crisis. We're covering it live, and we'll be back with much more when he's done.
Before we ask hedge fund managers to stop paying taxes at a lower rate than their secretaries, how can we slash funding for education and clean energy? Before we ask people like me to give up tax breaks we don't need and didn't ask for. That's not right. It's not fair. We all want a government that lives within its means, but there are still things we need to pay for as a country. Things like new roads and bridges, weather satellites and food inspection, services to veterans and medical research. And keep in mind that under a balanced approach, the 98% of Americans who make under $250,000 would see no tax increases at all. None. In fact, I want to extend the payroll tax cut for working families. What we're talking about under a balanced approach is asking Americans whose incomes have gone up the most over the last decade, millionaires and billionaires, to share in the sacrifice everyone else has to make. And I think these patriotic Americans are willing to pitch in. In fact, over the last few decades, they've pitched in every time we passed a bipartisan deal to reduce the deficit. The first time a deal was passed, a predecessor of mine made the case for a balanced approach by saying this: would you rather reduce deficits and interest rates by raising revenue from those who are not now paying their fair share? Or would you rather accept larger budget deficits, higher interest rates, and higher unemployment? And I think I know your answer. Those words were spoken by Ronald Reagan. But today, many Republicans in the House refuse to consider this kind of balanced approach, an approach that was pursued not only by President Reagan, but by the first President Bush, by President Clinton, by myself, and by many Democrats and Republicans in the United States Senate. So, we're left with a stalemate. Now, what makes today's stalemate so dangerous is that it has been tied to something known as the debt ceiling, a term that most people outside of Washington have probably never heard of before. Understand, raising the debt ceiling does not allow Congress to spend more money. It simply gives our country the ability to pay the bills that Congress has already racked up. In the past, raising the debt ceiling was routine. Since the 1950s, Congress has always passed it, and every president has signed it. President Reagan did it 18 times. George W. Bush did it 7 times. And we have to do it by next Tuesday, August 2nd, or else we won't be able to pay all of our bills. Unfortunately, for the past several weeks, Republican House members have essentially said that the only way they'll vote to prevent America's first ever default is if the rest of us agree to their deep spending cuts only approach. If that happens and we default, we would not have enough money to pay all of our bills, bills that include monthly Social Security checks, veterans benefits, and the government contracts we've signed with thousands of businesses. For the first time in history, our country's AAA credit rating would be downgraded, leaving investors around the world to wonder whether the United States is still a good bet. Interest rates would skyrocket on credit cards, on mortgages, and on car loans, which amounts to a huge tax hike on the American people. We would risk sparking a deep economic crisis, this one caused almost entirely by Washington. So defaulting on our obligations is a reckless and irresponsible outcome to this debate. And Republican leaders say that they agree we must avoid default. But the new approach that Speaker Boehner unveiled today, which would temporarily extend the debt ceiling in exchange for spending cuts, would force us to once again face the threat of default just 6 months from now. In other words, it doesn't solve the problem. First of all, a six-month extension of the debt ceiling might not be enough to avoid a credit downgrade and the higher interest rates that all Americans would have to pay as a result. We know what we have to do to reduce our deficits. There's no point in putting the economy at risk by kicking the can further down the road. But there's an even greater danger to this approach. Based on what we've seen these past few weeks, we know what to expect 6 months from now. The House of Representatives will once again refuse to prevent default unless the rest of us accept their cuts-only approach. Again, they will refuse to ask the wealthiest Americans to give up their tax cuts or deductions. Again, they will demand harsh cuts to programs like Medicare. And once again, the economy will be held captive unless they get their way. This is no way to run the greatest country on earth. It's a dangerous game that we've never played before, and we can't afford to play it now. Not when the jobs and livelihoods of so many families are at stake. We can't allow the American people to become collateral damage to Washington's political warfare. And Congress now has 1 week left to act, and there's still a path forward. The Senate has introduced a plan to avoid default, which makes a down payment on deficit reduction and ensures that we don't have to go through this again in 6 months. I think that's a much better approach, although serious deficit reduction would still require us to tackle the tough challenges of entitlement and tax reform. Either way, I've told leaders of both parties that they must come up with a fair compromise in the next few days that can pass both houses of Congress, and a compromise that I can sign. I'm confident we can reach this compromise. Despite our disagreements, Republican leaders and I have found common ground before, and I believe that enough members of both parties will ultimately put politics aside and help us make progress. Now, I realize that a lot of the new members of Congress and I don't see eye to eye on many issues, but we were each elected by some of the same Americans for some of the same reasons. Yes, many want government to start living within its means, and many are fed up with a system in which the deck seems stacked against middle-class Americans in favor of the wealthiest few. But do you know what people are fed up with most of all? They're fed up with a town where compromise has become a dirty word. They work all day long, many of them scraping by just to put food on the table. And when these Americans come home at night, bone-tired, and turn on the news, all they see is the same partisan three-ring circus here in Washington. They see leaders who can't seem to come together and do what it takes to make life just a little bit better for ordinary Americans. They're offended by that, and they should be. The American people may have voted for divided government, but they didn't vote for a dysfunctional government. So I'm asking you all to make your voice heard. If you want a balanced approach to reducing the deficit, let your member of Congress know. If you believe we can solve this problem through compromise, send that message. America, after all, has always been a grand experiment in compromise. As a democracy made up of every race and religion, where every belief and point of view is welcomed, we have put to the test time and again the proposition at the heart of our founding, that out of many, we are one. We've engaged in fierce and passionate debates about the issues of the day. But from slavery to war, from civil liberties to questions of economic justice, we have tried to live by the words that Jefferson once wrote. Every man cannot have his way in all things. Without this mutual disposition, we are disjointed individuals, but not a society. History is scattered with the stories of those who held fast to rigid ideologies and refused to listen to those who disagreed. But those are not the Americans we remember. We remember the Americans who put country above self and set personal grievances aside for the greater good. We remember the Americans who held this country together during its most difficult hours, who put aside pride and party to form a more perfect union. That's who we remember. That's who we need to be right now. The entire world is watching. So let's seize this moment to show why the United States of America is still the greatest nation on earth. Not just because we can still keep our word and meet our obligations, but because we can still come together as one nation. Thank you. God bless you. and may God bless the United States of America.
You've been listening to the President of the United States speaking from the East Room of the White House. You're listening to the Mike Malloy Show. I'm Brad Friedman from bradblog.com, covering the live speech of the presidents tonight. We'll also be covering Speaker Boehner, who is going to be speaking, I believe, soon. We don't know how soon on this phony debt crisis wherein the Republicans continue to hold the nation hostage, quite frankly. And we're going to be speaking about it with John Amato of Crooks and Liars shortly. And then in the next hour, we're going to be speaking with Robert Scheer, veteran columnist, journalist, and now editor-in-chief of TruthDig.com. The president basically laid out the two approaches that are now at stake here. He said that he is favoring a balanced approach, wherein we have to live within our means, we have to cut domestic and defense spending by hundreds of billions, cut waste and fraud, and, quote, modest adjustments to Medicare so that it's there for generations. He asks wealthy Americans and corporations to give up some of their tax cuts, and he also says it was a bipartisan plan that he had been working until recently on with Republican House Speaker John Boehner. Now, instead, it seems that the Republicans have bailed on that, and they are insisting on a, quote, cuts-only approach. They will not raise any tax revenue on the wealthiest of Americans. And that's where we're currently at. We'll see what John Boehner has to say. But the president invoked Ronald Reagan, who said that that we can't let the debt limit expire, and he called on the American people to call Congress and let them know if you would like to see this balanced approach. Let me take a quick break here before going to John Amato, who I think we have, so that we come back in case John Boehner is speaking. So hang on the line there, John Amato. Brad Friedman in for Mike Malloy. Oh, is now John Boehner?
Members of both parties that you elect. These are difficult times in the life of our nation. Millions are looking for work and have been for some time. And the spending binge going on in Washington is a big part of the reason why. Before I served in Congress, I ran a small business in Ohio. I was amazed at how different Washington, D.C. operated than every other business in America. Where most American businesses make the hard choices to pay their bills, live within their means, in Washington, more spending and more debt is business as usual. Well, I've got news for Washington. Those days are over. President Obama came to Congress in January and requested business as usual. He had another routine increase in the national debt, but we in the House said, not so fast. Here was the president asking for the largest debt increase in American history on the heels of the largest spending binge in American history. And here's what we got for that massive spending binge. A new health care bill that most Americans never asked for. A stimulus bill that's more effective in producing material for late-night comedians than it was in producing jobs. And a national debt that has gotten so out of hand, it sparked a crisis without precedent in my lifetime or yours. The United States cannot default on its debt obligations. The jobs and savings of too many Americans are at stake. What we told the president in January was this, that the American people will not accept an increase in the debt limit without significant spending cuts and reforms. And over the last 6 months, we've done our best to convince the president to partner with us to do something dramatic to change the fiscal trajectory of our country, something that will boost confidence in our economy, renew a measure of faith in our government, and help small businesses get back on track. Last week, the House passed such a plan, and with bipartisan support. It's called the Cut, Cap, and Balance Act. It cuts and caps government spending and paves the way for a balanced budget amendment to the Constitution, which we believe is the best way to stop Washington from spending money that it doesn't have. Before we even passed the bill in the House, the President said he would veto it. I want you to know I made a sincere effort to work with the President to identify a path forward that would implement the principles of cut, cap, and balance in a manner that could secure bipartisan support and be signed into law. And I'll tell you, I gave it my all. Unfortunately, the president would not take yes for an answer. Even when we thought we might be close on an agreement, the president's demands changed. The president has often said we need a balanced approach, which in Washington means we spend more and you pay more. Having run a small business, I know those tax increases will destroy jobs. The president is adamant that we cannot make fundamental changes to our entitlement programs. As a father of two daughters, I know these programs won't be there for them and their kids unless significant action is taken now. And the sad truth is that the president wanted a blank check 6 months ago, and he wants a blank check today. This is just not going to happen. You see, there's no stalemate here in Congress. The House passed a bill to raise the debt limit with bipartisan support. And this week, while the Senate is struggling to pass a bill filled with phony accounting and Washington gimmicks, we're going to pass another bill, one that was developed with the support of the bipartisan leadership of the U.S. Senate. Obviously, I expect that bill can and will pass the Senate and be sent to the president for a signature. And if the president signs it, the crisis atmosphere that he has created will simply disappear.
More live coverage of the Boehner speech and the President Obama speech here on the Mike Malloy Show. We got to take a quick break, and we will also be joined by John Amato of Crooks and Liars. Right after this, a big night tonight. Please do stay with us.
He can make you love. He can make you cry.
Welcome back to the Mike Malloy Show. It's a breaking news night again, like whenever Mike Malloy goes out of town. Anyway, Brad Friedman of BradBlog.com in for Mike. We ran long in that first segment because we wanted to get as much of the president's speech and Boehner's speech on this phony debt crisis as we could. We will have color, analysis, commentary with John Amato of Crooks and Liars right after we come back from this break, and Robert Scheer a little bit later tonight. You're listening to Brad on the Malloy Show. Yeah, you're listening to the Mike Malloy Show. Brad Friedman, your friendly investigative citizen journalist, blogger, troublemaker, muckraker, drafted into duty from BradBlog.com here to be the broadcast media as Mike Malloy works his way back from the Progressive Voices Conference over the weekend in Seattle. He will be back with you tomorrow night. And tonight, we are covering the breaking news of this phony debt ceiling crisis that the Republicans have foisted upon us all as they put a gun to the nation's economy, the world economy, and tell us if they don't have it their way, they're taking them all down. They're taking everybody down with them. The president spoke for 15 minutes. We carried as much of that as we could live, followed by John Boehner, who spoke for 5 minutes. The president has called for a balanced approach wherein there are taxes, there are cuts to spending as well as tax revenue increases. John Boehner, on the other hand, says all we're going to do is cut spending. That's it. End of story. There will be no compromise. Obama has called it a stalemate. John Boehner says there's no stalemate. I don't understand that. So to explain that and much more, we are joined here on the Mike Malloy Show. Oh, I should say the chat room, by the way, is open at bradblog.com. And you can get in with your opinions if you like at 877-520-1150. Okay, to help us unwind this ungodly, stupid mess, I'm joined now by the creator, publisher, editor, curator of CrooksandLiars.com, my old friend John Amato. He joins us on the Mike Malloy Show. Hey, John, welcome to the show, sir.
Hey, Brad, what's happening? I'm so not glad to be here talking about a fictitious crisis.
Yeah, no kidding, right? Can you explain this to me at all, John? You heard the president say that Washington is at a stalemate, and then the most curious item from Boehner's speech there was he says there is no stalemate here in Washington. Huh? Do you understand what the hell he means by that?
No, Boehner's just playing games. you know, this whole we passed legislation in Congress that cut cap and balance, hoax of a bill which is really just a, everybody knows who follows politics, is just a meaningless, stupid political ploy that instead of, you know, working on solving the issue, they're fooling around with bills that are meaningless. So this is how they take their own fictitious crisis. They don't even believe that it is one. It's all about politics, and it's frustrating for progressives, especially since this debt ceiling vote had always been a pro forma event in Congress. It was always just passed and moved along, because, you know, we're talking about raising the debt ceiling to pay, you know, to borrow to pay for money we've already spent. So it's just ridiculous, the whole thing.
It is ridiculous, but how? I don't know how they're going to get out of this, John. I mean, are the Republicans willing to bring down the economy around this phony issue? Is that what this is all about?
Well, the Obama administration certainly has been playing this like they don't believe they'll do that. I mean, remember Boehner and also the little boy Eric Cantor, as well as Paul Ryan, have been huge beneficiaries from taking Wall Street money and Wall Street bribes. And I mean, John Boehner is famous for passing around big tobacco checks on the floor of Congress. So we know where his corporate, you know, his corporate ties lie.
Right.
And they've always taken the approach that Wall Street's, you know, been beating them up already to get this thing passed, because they are the ones that are going to suffer once, you know, our credit rating is downgraded. But if the markets react, which they know they will. So they've always felt that these guys are going to play politics with it because of the Tea Party caucus and, you know, milk this as much as they can and then pass something. And it's very, like, again, it's very frustrating. So, you know, what did you think about Obama's speech? I mean, I thought he could have been more forceful. He's still, you know, as much as some progressives want to deny, Obama does want to have a grand bargain. And he wants to be the adult in the room.
Mm-hmm.
He wants to put himself above both parties and say, look, I'm willing to make this big compromise, which includes tinkering with our social safety nets, which could raise the ages when we can actually collect, to do this grand bargain, because he brought it up today in the speech. And
I had, John Amato, I had a lot of folks who called in on Friday, you know, when we were talking about the same issue, and they were furious that Barack Obama was even considering making cuts to Medicare, Medicaid, and particularly Social Security, which is in the black, which is solvent through something like 2036 or 2037. They were furious at him, and yet he persists. Is that a show, John, or is he saying, yes, I really will make these cuts? In other words, is he doing this to highlight who is really the adult here, and that if this whole thing does come down, if the Republicans are really willing to make good on their threats, that, well, at least there was Barack Obama trying to give away as much as he could in order to make a bargain. Is it theater in that sense, or?
Well, you know, again, we all wish that we were in the negotiations. We all wish that we were in the president's head and actually seeing what he's thinking. But, I mean, he's talked about a grand bargain for a very long time, and having this bipartisan rising above the fray, not being afraid to anger his base.
Mm-hmm.
So I believe that, you know, realistically, he does want a grand bargain, but on the flip side, the Republicans are desperate to get the Democrats to make some sort of what they can call cuts into Medicare, because they are in so much trouble in the next election cycle because of Paul Ryan's budget proposal, you know, that they passed.
Right.
But Paul Ryan has caused them so much grief that, you know, this is the main issue that the Democratic Party has to actually run on in 2012. So the fact is that it appears, as we read news reports, that the Obama team believes that independent voters and a lot of America do believe that deficits are more important at this time than actually trying to stimulate the economy, and they're making their choice. And this is, I believe, what they're doing. Now, do you believe there's a three-dimensional chess match going on? Well, obviously, but I believe he still wants to make that grand bargain. And I would have taken, as much as I loathe to say it, the McConnell plan when he originally talked about it, and I'll take the Reid plan over any kind of a grand bargain.
And let's go through some of those details so that we know what is not currently acceptable by John Boehner and the U.S. House. I'm speaking with John Amato of Crooks and Liars. I am, of course, Brad Friedman of BradBlog.com. You're listening to The Mike Malloy Show. The latest offer this morning, all of a sudden, Harry Reid came out of nowhere and offered what was said to have been exactly what the Republicans had been asking for, at least to a certain extent, and then they turned that down as well. Can you give me an idea, John? What was this offer from Harry Reid that was said to have been so good, yet they still the Republicans still said no to it anyway?
Well, the good thing about, the only good thing about the Reid plan, as far as progressive politics and Keynesian economics is concerned, is that it does not touch the social safety nets. It does not touch Social Security, does not touch Medicare, and it does not touch Medicaid. Now, there are no revenue increases to the plan, but he's basically using cuts that they've already agreed to in the Biden deal, mm-hmm. and then he's gone around and found some other, like, cuts as far as troops that are returning home and other, let's just call them more, bookkeeping kinds of cuts into federal programs that they've come up with extra, I don't know, what was it, another $700 billion?
It was
$2.4 billion in straight spending cuts. So there's no revenue included, which is what the Republicans have been denouncing. In other words, we cannot raise taxes, we cannot cut loopholes, mm-hmm. we cannot, we can't cut subsidies to oil companies. So Reid's plan is actually doing that. And the fact is that the Republicans now, it appears their strategy is to go the two-step route so that then in the election cycle they can bring back the debt ceiling fight to cover up for their big Paul Ryan fiasco.
And so just to make sense of that, in other words, the Harry Reid, and I think, what was it, $1.2 trillion or $1.7 trillion or something like that?
I think it came from the Biden deal, which was like $1.7 trillion, spending cuts in government, which the administration says that they could live with.
And it would have cut spending without cutting social safety programs. It would have moved the debt limit out beyond next year's election, and it would not have raised what the Republicans like to call tax increases, but really are just revenue increases, closing loopholes, and so forth. And yet the Republicans turned it down.
I mean, I have some details. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's got $40 billion in integrity savings. It's $30 billion in Fannie and Freddie Mac reforms, mm-hmm. $15 billion in Spectrum sales, so $400 billion in interest savings. So there's there's no revenues that are being asked as far as even, compromising on Democratic principles, because we believe that especially at a time of a recession and just high unemployment, you can't cut your way out of unemployment. You can't use austerity measures to then grow the economy. It just doesn't, because now you're laying off so many workers that you put them back into the workforce, they're out of work. And as we've seen, big business has trillions of dollars just sitting in billions on the sidelines. There's corporations that have been making huge profits during this time, and they're not hiring workers.
I wonder why. Yes, record profits. One of the reasons they're not hiring workers is because they are not the job creators. The people are the job creators when they start spending money. I'm speaking with John Amato of CrooksandLiars.com. You can get in on this conversation if you would like. 877-520-1150. We're going to take a quick break here. But, John, I think the fact that they wouldn't take that deal, that they instead want to, you know, to buy 6 months and put this smack dab right in the middle of the election year, tells us pretty much all we need to know. This is about politics, and this is about taking down the president. It has nothing to do with the country as far as I'm concerned. But we'll find out what John Amato thinks, and we will find out what you think after this quick break. You're listening to Brad Friedman of BradBlog.com here on The Mike Malloy Show, 877-520-1150. Give us a shout. Tell me. Welcome back to the Highway to Hell. Brad Friedman of BradBlog.com in for Mike Malloy for one more night here, broadcasting live from the left coast, coast to coast, and around the globe, covering the president's speech tonight, John Boehner's, Speaker John Boehner's reply to it on this debt ceiling showdown that the bill comes due, I'm told, next Tuesday, or at least that's what the president says, next Tuesday when we go straight to hell if this is not all figured out. President's calling for a balanced approach, as he has been now for quite some time, including cuts to spending and revenue increases. John Boehner just says, absolutely not. We will have no revenue increases whatsoever. And he claims the president's demands have changed. And meanwhile, the president asks you to call Congress if you are in favor of those balanced, what he calls balanced approach. Our number is 877-520-1150. We're speaking with John Amato of Crooks and Liars. Next hour, we're going to be joined by Robert Scheer. We got some phone lines that are full here, John. So let's, you want to try to get in a quick call or two here?
I certainly will. By the way, I have a quick point.
Yeah.
During the debate, I believe it's been reported on Twitter that S&P said that if they adopted Boehner's plan, that we would definitely get a downgrade in our credit rating. But if they went with Reid's plan, we would not be downgraded.
Really? Okay, well, there you go. And as we all know, this is all driven by what the markets want the country to do, and we do what they say. So,
exactly.
Let me get to Reggie in Midland, Texas. Hey, Reggie, welcome to the Mike Malloy Show, sir. What is on your mind?
Well, I was just curious. You know, I run a small business in Midland, and, I don't understand the situation with our government and how if we continue to raise the debt ceiling, that's akin to me continuing to go to my bank and ask for more money when I'm not making my ends meet. At some point, that's got to stop.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm interested in how we could, number one, if we continue to do that, it's gonna ruin our the federal government and how they pay their bills.
Well, what do you mean? What do you mean it'll ruin the federal government, Reggie? What do you mean by that?
Well, I mean, they can't pay their bills if they don't get more taxes because their spending is too high. So we have to rein back in the spending and sleep in the bed that we've made over the last 20 years, 30
right.
years, even beyond that.
So you're in favor of the balanced approach that the president was talking about, where he said we need to cut spending and then raise some revenue, like cut spending 4 to 1 versus revenue cuts. You're in favor of that?
I'm absolutely in favor of cutting spending but not raising taxes. That's akin to me telling my employees, hey, I'm going to give everybody a $1 demotion because I can't pay my bills as a business owner, so you're going to have to pay for it for me.
And you're willing to see the faith and credit of the United States brought down to avoid any raises, right?
If that be the case, then that be the case, because we've made our bed and we're going to have to sleep.
Reggie, as a small business owner, I think you're not going to be happy with that decision if what you're calling for comes true. Let me go to John Amato on this. Let me go to John Amato on this, Reggie. Go ahead, John.
The call.
you know, there's a common, you know, common theme, which is to equate the American, the U.S. government to everybody's household, and it's a good example, like it's a simple example, but it really doesn't equate, because you're talking about, you know, the most powerful nation in the world, and that's not the way government runs. As far as I've also run small businesses like you, Reggie, and so it's not a proper analogy. But if we just got rid of the Bush tax cuts, that would raise revenues. And also, before the Bush tax cuts, our economy had a huge surplus. So if we did that one thing, which is just eliminate Bush tax cuts, that would help fix a lot of this problem.
Just that alone. In fact, if we did nothing, we would get rid of the deficit at this point. Let me go to Ellen in Nashville, Tennessee. Welcome to the Mike Malloy Show. Do you have a quick question for John Amato? Because we're up against the top of the hour.
Okay, well, it's not a question, actually. I'm looking at two articles in The Hill, and one is entitled Boehner Proposal Includes a Vote on Ballot Budget Amendment. If you go to that one, you'll see he lays out his plan. He mentions this joint committee that would be appointed, 12 members, to look at other cuts to things like entitlements.
Right.
And also in The Hill, Reid unveils $2.7 trillion plan and dares GOP to vote against it. In The Hill, that article, same thing. If you read on down, it says right here, I'm looking at it right now, that they will appoint a committee to receive, to review further deficit reduction proposals.
I think they both did, but let me get a response from John since I'm up against the top of the hour.
Okay.
John, the difference being, I think one was a plan would have gone out for a year. John Boehner's plan would have put this all smack dab in the middle of the election year next year, correct?
Right. Also, I mean, I'm not crazy about, you know, appointing these commissions, and then suddenly it's not the legislature that's making these cuts. It's some commission, right? Our government. That's why we elect people in the House of Representatives and in the Senate. They're supposed to be handling legislature. The president's not supposed to be not only running the country but then writing all the bills and passing all the legislation. So it is quite frustrating, and we're at a frustrating point. And the biggest thing is that this debt ceiling is a phony, faulty crisis, because it's been, as you know, throughout the history of the country, it's just been a pro forma vote.
It is indeed. John Amato of Crooks and Liars. I got to run. I'm sorry. I got to run. I'm up against the clock. Thanks, John. Really appreciate it. Check him out at crooksandliars.com. Robert Shearer, and more of your calls straight ahead on The Malloy Show. Welcome back to the Mike Malloy Show, 6 minutes after the hour. Brad Friedman of BradBlog.com, your friendly citizen investigative journalist, troublemaker, muckraker, all-around swell fellow, broadcasting one more night here tonight from the West Coast, from the beautiful studios of K-Talk AM 1150 in Los Angeles, Burbank, California, to be specific, covering the debt ceiling theater, of course, tonight, and those live speeches that you heard us carry from the President of the United States and the House Speaker John Boehner in the previous hour, as the Republicans continue to put a gun to the head of the nation if they don't get their way in every way, shape, or form. I know we got some more folks who want to talk about this on the line. I'll get to your calls momentarily at 877-520-1150. We will be joined by veteran columnist and journalist Robert Shearer in this hour to get his perspective on this fine mess and how it's all going to break down, finish up by next Tuesday, I guess, August 2nd, when, if a deal is not had, the United States officially goes into default. I suspect that's not going to happen. The only question is, how much are the Republicans going to get their way, the little crybabies? By the time we get there, how much are the Democrats, Barack Obama and the Democrats, going to be willing to give away for the problem that, in truth, they really didn't create? I know that Obama himself said that both parties created this mess. In truth, Both parties didn't, not as far as I'm concerned. I feel a little bad here because, you know, usually if you guys have heard me when I've been in for Mike in the past, we had the budget battle. I can't remember when it was, earlier this year when I was in, and we were able to get a solution for that literally in the third hour of the show. I guess it was Friday, the third hour. They finally got a solution. My last day sitting in for Mike solved that problem before he got back. The Mubarak problem out there in Egypt. Got rid of Hosni Mubarak on the last day that I was sitting in. Solved that before Mike got back too. So I feel a little guilty because I was hoping we would be able to solve the debt ceiling crisis before Mike Malloy returned, which he will tomorrow. But oh well. Sorry, Mike. I tried. Can't win them all. I do my best. We had a completely different show planned for you tonight until the president and the Republicans decided once again to ruin my night. Among the things I had hoped to talk about was this Norway, the Oslo shootings, and these idiot right-wingers who came out on, what was it, Friday, when the shooting happened and immediately started blaming, Muslim jihad. Well, what do you know? It wasn't that. Sorry, Andrew Breitbart, you got it wrong again. We'll try to cover that a little bit here in a bit or in our third hour. Also, another fine mess up in Wisconsin now where they are implementing photo ID restrictions at the polling place. We'll have some news on that, hopefully, in this show. Certainly tomorrow on bradblog.com, if all goes well. And last week, some of you may recall, if you heard the show, that I talked about a big, big exclusive that I have been working on, a series of them. And in fact, part two of the series, I actually lost in my 5,000-word story right before coming on the air last week. Well, I spent the weekend recreating that. So though we're a little day or two late, we're still on track. Got part three to come, and we will be presenting it soon at bradblog.com or elsewhere. And that's all I'll say. I will mention it has something to do with Koch brothers. But other than that, I'm not going to give you any more hints. And let's get to some of these calls. Some of the folks who wanted to ring in on the debt ceiling theater crisis, phony nonsense. Let's go to Carol in Walnut Creek, California. Hey, Carol, welcome to the Mike Malloy Show.
Thank you very much, Brad.
Thank you. What's on your mind?
Well, I'm getting increasingly outraged by the use of the term entitlements to describe Medicare and Social Security. I looked up entitlements on Wikipedia, and it says, in a casual sense, the term entitlements refers to a notion or belief that one is deserving of some reward or benefit. As a legal term, entitlement carries no value judgment. It simply denotes a right granted. Mm-hmm. This is neither a right granted or the deserving of some reward or benefit. This is my hard-earned money put into the Social Security system so that when I'm old, I can pull it out and be taken care of.
Mm-hmm.
And I resent the fact that even President Obama is using the word entitlement, which skews the picture of what it really is and makes it sound like something that we don't have, that we have not participated in, that we just get as a present, like someone buys you a dozen roses.
Yeah, no, I do know. And I mean, it's difficult because, in fact, it is an entitlement in that you are entitled to it because you paid into it and you are entitled to, you know, to get what you paid for. So, but I know when you hear entitlement, you know, because people say, oh, they think they're entitled to this or that. Well, in truth, you are entitled to this, but it's not some special deal, some special bargain. I don't know how you otherwise talk about it and talk about these things. I guess you can call them social programs, although that will soon, you know, also sound like it's trying to marginalize these things. But no, you're right. This was a deal that you made. If you pay in X number of dollars, you will get X number of dollars back down the road. This is a deal. This is a bargain. But as you can tell from the Republicans, they don't give a damn about deals and bargains because we also had a deal and a bargain to pay our bills. And now they're acting like they feel they don't have to pay them just because suddenly they don't want to. you know?
Well, I definitely think they use the word entitlement to diminish our right to have it. And there was one more comment I wanted to make, and that is that when Speaker Boehner kept referring to bipartisan legislation, he was talking about, what, four Democrats and a ton and a half of Republicans?
Yeah.
That's such a misconception that it was bipartisan.
Well, now you're implying that John Boehner would try to pull one over on the American people, and I just can't
abide by it.
That would never happen. Hey, Carol, thanks for your thoughts. Thanks for using your public airwaves to make some good points here tonight. I really do appreciate it. Thanks for calling, Carol.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. All right. Let me get to Kevin in, where are we here? Kevin in Colorado Springs. Welcome to the Mike Malloy Show.
Thank you, Brad. I'm a disabled person. I've been disabled for 13 years. I'm blind. I've never been as scared as I am now. Come July 3rd, I will possibly not get a Social Security check.
August 3rd. Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Carol made the point, one of the points I was going to make, about it is something I put my hard-earned money into. I've been frustrated with the president because he's talked about giving away some of these entitlements or cutting some of these entitlements. And I listened to him tonight, and I've got to say, I think that this will change the American public opinion away from the Republicans. They are very badly overplaying their hand, and I intend to stand firm with the president as long as he doesn't make any cuts to the Social Security or Medicare or Medicaid. Because it's something, just like Carol said, I paid into. It would be different if you just gave it to me. But yeah. I paid into it.
You did. I know. And you deserve to get what you paid for. But you know what? These people aren't playing that game. They're playing their political games. They don't give a damn about you, Kevin. I mean, that's really what it comes down to. And I'm not... I'm speaking specifically about the Republicans there, but yeah, Obama was willing to cut a lot of these services. I'd like to think that these benefits would not be cut, that they're talking about, fraud and restructuring the system, but, you know, I don't know. Make your voice heard, Kevin. I appreciate you making the call here.
I wanted to ask you to do one other thing.
All right.
The president talked about people calling Congress. Can you give out the national number for calling Congress so that you then can get a hold of your elected representative?
Yeah, let me go get that for you. And, Des, if you can pop that up on my screen here, I'd appreciate it. I was going to say that we're getting news reports right now that while Obama suggested contacting members of Congress, apparently some House servers are reportedly crashing under the traffic of
Very
people trying
good.
To contact them.
Very good.
And, of course, Wolfram, a very funny guy over on Twitter, says, say what you will, but it was really stupid to allow Diebold to handle the White House computer systems.
Yeah,
there you go. Hey, Kevin, I appreciate the call. Keep up the fight, brother. Good luck to you, and we're all in this mess together, so we got your back. Thank you, brother.
Thank you.
All right, we're going to take a break here shortly and then come back with, Bob Scheer is going to be coming in at the bottom of the hour. We'll be joined by Robert Scheer, get the big picture perspective on this fine mess. And I will also very quickly, can I get this in? Joyce, let me go real quick to Joyce in Nevada. Hey, Joyce, welcome to the Mike Malloy Show. What's on your mind, Joyce?
I just have a question.
Yes, ma'am.
If Obama is the commander-in-chief,
yep.
and they don't want to come up with a budget like he wants, mm-hmm. can't he just say the hell with them and say this is what it's going to be?
Well, sort of, in that some people interpret the 14th Amendment of the Constitution as giving the president the right to do that, in that it says the debt of the United States of America shall not be questioned. So if Barack Obama wanted to, he could play what is called the constitutional option and say, you know what? I'm raising the debt limit on my own. I am spending, I'm going to pay the troops. I'm going to pay the Social Security bills. I'm going to pay the bills of this nation that we have incurred. I'm going to do that on my own authority because I believe the Constitution allows me to do that. And then, of course, he can be sued by someone. Presumably Congress would have to pass a resolution to take the president of the United States to court. So, yeah, he could do it if he wants. We might get a constitutional showdown out of it. But, yeah, he could do it. And he's trying to do everything he can to avoid that. Hope that answers.
Yeah, well, at the moment, though, from the way it's sounding, what the Republicans want to do is going to hurt the elderly. It's going to hurt the handicap, and it's definitely going to hurt the future because the kids are the future. So if they cut Medicaid, Medicare, and Social Security, where does that leave it?
Yeah, well, that leaves us in a mess. Now, they're not going to cut all of it. You know, they're not going to get rid of all of it. And I believe he's going to fight for something that... I don't even know anymore. I don't know what to think anymore. I do know that he does not want to exercise that option. But you know what? If that's what it comes down to on August 2nd, I hope that's what he does rather than let this nation default on its obligations. Only Republicans would call for that. Joyce,
I agree because I also feel like they're only doing it because he is the president. They
of course
increase
you
the
bet.
Limit on everybody else. So why now? Because he's black?
Well, because he's a Democrat and this is their latest stupid idea. Joyce, I got to get to a break. I appreciate your call. Drive safely out there, and we're going to be back with more Mike Malloy Show and Robert Scheer at the bottom of the hour. Brad Friedman in for Mike Malloy. Please stay tuned.
Money. Day after day, alone on a hill, the man with the foolish grin is keeping perfectly still.
Yeah, foolish grin right now on CNN. They had this jackass Eric Erickson from Red State. .com or .org or what, you know, whatever right winger he is who is paid by CNN to be wrong, basically. One of the things that he was wrong about Eric Erickson last week as we were going on the air, we had these Oslo shootings that turned out to be a right wing extremist. An Islamophobe who did these killings. Yet that didn't stop guys like Eric Erickson from going out and saying that it was Muslim jihadists who had pulled off this killing. Andrew Breitbart did the same, both of them on Twitter. They have now deleted their tweets because they were so terribly wrong, making fun of the whole situation, saying, oh, I bet it's not a Lutheran who pulled it off. So I can't read you what they actually said. I read it this morning, but by the time I went to copy it down, it was gone. In the meantime, Glenn Beck had, unbelievable, making matters worse, Glenn Beck had this to say on his radio show about this camp where these kids were killed last Friday.
So, Saturday, I was following the news. Of the shooting in Norway and the explosion in Norway, which happened, what, on Friday?
Yeah, the explosion was, and then we left the air, and right, and then he went to, the camp.
Yeah, well, when we heard the explosion, everybody was willing to say, it's Muslim extremists! It's Muslim extremists!
No, everybody was not willing to say that. Only idiots like Eric Erickson, like Andrew Breitbart, like Jennifer Rubin over at the Washington Post, responsible people, did no such thing. But Glenn, please continue.
I don't think we made a comment on it because we didn't know, other than there was a bombing that happened. And as the thing started to unfold, and then there was a shooting at a political camp, which sounds a little like, you know, the Hitler Youth or whatever. I mean, who does a camp for kids that's all about politics?
Are you kidding?
Disturbing.
Disturbing? Are you kidding, Glenn? Is that really the way you're going to compare this camp where almost 80 kids were killed by a gunman to a Hitler Youth? Really? Really, Glenn Beck? And then you go on to say, who does a camp for kids that's all about politics? Disturbing. Well, who would do a political camp for kids? Jason Easley over at Politicus USA has an answer. He says that this month, the Tampa 912 Project held a summer camp for kids called the Tampa Liberty School, which was described on their own website as a part-time summer camp that will meet from 9 a.m. to noon on July 11 through 15. Kids aged 8 through 12 will have fun while learning the principles of liberty, free markets, and limited government. They will also learn the values of personal responsibility, faith, courage, hard work, reverence, and thrift. Of course, the 912 Project was created by Glenn Beck, and that camp would be put on by the Tampa 912 Project. Or as Glenn Beck likes to say, disturbing. Who has a camp for kids that's all about politics? Well, let's see. There would be the Hitler Youth and you. You jackass, Glenn Beck. Back with more Robert Scheer here on the Mike Malloy Show right after this.
The devil went down to Georgia.
I just need some place where I can lay my head. Hey, mister, can you tell?
Welcome back to the Mike Malloy Show. 34 minutes after the hour. Brad Friedman in for Mike Malloy. One more night here. He will be back with you tomorrow. So soon your long national nightmare will be over. Even if the phony, fake, idiotic debt crises in quotes continues. We're going to speak with Robert Scheer here momentarily, but a caller had asked for the Capitol Hill switchboard as Obama made his speech earlier tonight and called on the American people to contact Congress if they would like to see the balanced approach, the quote unquote balanced approach, as the president described it, with includes spending cuts and tax revenue increases, although a lot more spending cuts than revenue increases. Nonetheless, he says, if you want that balanced approach, let your congressman know. Well, apparently we've got some reports that the Capitol Hill switchboard has been knocked out by the volume of calls. Don't know if it's back up or not. Nonetheless, if you'd like to call your congressman, 202-224-3121. That's 202-224-3121. Or alternately, 202-225-3131. Let them know what you think. Brad Friedman of BradBlog.com. You can reach us via the Twitters at TheBradBlog. Also over in the BradBlog.com chat room, which is up live and rolling whenever we are sitting in for Mike Malloy. So stop on by and say hello there. For Earth and Dez are both in there moderating and being nice to everyone as they usually are. Okay, I wanted to get a bigger, a broader, if you will, perspective on this entire fine mess of what we're seeing now in D.C. Not even just now with this showdown, with this debt ceiling, this fake crisis here, but with this entire fine mess as we're heading into D.C., heading into an election year, you know, to explain what the hell we're seeing right now. To that end, I thought Robert Scheer would be a great guy to talk to about this, and that's what we're going to do here. Robert Scheer is the editor-in-chief of TruthDig.com. He's earned a great many awards and honors during his 30 years as a journalist. His columns appear in newspapers across the country. His in-depth interviews have made headlines, including the famous Playboy interview magazine in which Jimmy Carter confessed to lust in his heart. And he went on to do many interviews for the LA Times with Richard Nixon, Reagan, Clinton, and everyone else you can think of. From 76 to 93, he served as a national correspondent for the LA Times before becoming a contributing editor and a columnist there. That column ran weekly for 12 years, and it's now based at truthdig.com. He can also be heard on the political program Left, Right, and Center on National Public Radio, and I could go on and on. He's written 9 books. Any case, this guy knows what he's talking about, and hopefully he can answer some of my questions about this fine mess. He's also a colleague of mine, I should mention, at KPFK, Pacifica Radio, where we both do a show once a week. Robert Scheer, welcome, sir, to the Mike Malloy Show.
How are you doing?
I'm doing okay. Boy, I'm trying to figure out where I should start with you. Should we start with that mess the president and Boehner there, or should we go to the big picture first?
Well, the sad thing is, you know, first of all, the debt ceiling is going to be lifted, just as it has been lifted, as the president mentioned, every other time, because Wall Street will go crazy and the ratings agencies will go crazy, and so it'll come down to the wire, and at the end of the day there will be some so-called compromise. He used the word over and over, compromise, compromise, compromise. The question is, what gets compromised away? And what I didn't like about the president, there's two things basically I didn't like about the president's speech. I think Boehner's was all full of crap. I mean, I don't care, I don't have to analyze that. I mean, that's just a phony. These guys talk about they want smaller government, big government means the people are smaller. Well, why do we have big government? Because we have a big military, because we bailed out Wall Street, and the Republicans have favored every one of those things.
Of course.
They pushed it through under George W. Bush. The bailout and everything else came from them. So for them to talk about, smaller government when they're not willing to cut defense spending, which is at Cold War levels, and they're not willing to cut their gifts to Wall Street, that's just utter nonsense. But what was disappointing about the president were two things. One is he has surrendered the basic argument. The reason we have a problem now is that the debt went up 50%, beginning with George W. Bush, but it went up 50% because of the economic meltdown, which, by the way, my book, The Great American Stick-Up, documents the origins and everything else. And,
right.
And the fact of the matter is this did not have to happen. And it didn't happen because of Social Security or Medicare, which have nothing to do with it, nothing. And he even had, I thought it was absurd that he mentioned people might not get their Social Security checks. Why not? The Social Security Trust Fund is not in debt. The government owes the Social Security Trust Fund money.
Right.
It's borrowed from the Social Security Trust Fund. Why should that even be in play? Social Security did not contribute to this problem either, by the way, did Medicare. So the idea that these programs, the best programs America has ever had on the domestic level, are being thrown into play by this president, I think is really frightening. And when he basically gives up the big argument. What he should say is, we are in deep trouble because of bad policies of radical deregulation that unfettered Wall Street greed, cost all of us these jobs. By the way, corporations, big corporations, are doing very well.
Mm-hmm.
Their profit pictures are quite high, but they're creating jobs overseas and not here. And he would say, look, I followed George W. Bush's policy. That's why the debt is high. But I'm not going to now make the ordinary Americans accountable. I'm going to stick it to the people that I bailed out. I've saved their bacon. I've saved their job. For instance, he mentioned hedge funds. The hedge fund manager, pays less than his secretary. Well, why is that? That was a bipartisan policy, mm-hmm. to treat hedge fund income at a lower rate than ordinary working income. And by the way, his great economic advisor, Lawrence Summers, the year he was advising Obama in 08 when Obama was running, got over $4 million from the D.E. Shaw hedge fund, that very year. And certainly he and Geithner did not in any serious way look at the hedge funds when they came in, but it's good that the president now mentions it.
Let me ask you this, Robert, speaking with Robert Scheer. Bob, when you talk about the fact that Obama said that Social Security checks might not get paid, are you angry that he would even bring this up, that he's even talking about changes or cuts to Social Security, or the fact that
the whole thing, Social Security should not be in play. Now, Medicare, medical costs, you have another issue, but as Paul Krugman points out today, that's a general health care cost issue, and in fact, Medicare is a much better program than private insurance. So any idea of shoving seniors over into private insurance would be the same as when they wanted to privatize Social Security. That's just nuts. Yes, we have to do something about health care costs and about the power of the insurance companies. That's for real. Social Security is not in any objective trouble. If it were, by the way, you just increase the caps.
Right.
So people paying over $102,000, making over $102,000 for a couple, well, okay, they'll pay extra Social Security. That's not a, a difficult one, but that's not going to be in trouble, you know, for what, 25 years?
Exactly, 2037. And by the way, it seems to me they ought to raise those caps anyway. But is it possible that when he talks about a Social Security check not getting out, that that is pure politics trying to scare the hell out of people?
Well, first of all, if he did that, it would be the most irresponsible thing, because he would be mean that he would be paying back people who can well afford not to be paid back, and he would take it out on seniors who are dependent upon their checks.
Right.
I mean, that would be nutso. But what really is disturbing is he should have pointed out that Social Security is by no means insolvent, and the Social Security Trust Fund can pay at 100% for the next 25 years, and even then, after that, at their worst projection, still can pay 75%. And the reason the Social Security Trust Fund might not get its money is because the U.S. government has been living off it. That's the credit card.
Well, right, but why the hell then is Obama even including...
Are you allowed to say hell on this radio?
You can say hell. Not too much more than that, but yeah, you could say... well, actually, there are a few more things as the show goes on, but why the hell is he even including Social Security, which is solvent for the next 25 years? Why is that even a part of this grand bargain here at all, Bob?
Because he's a compromiser and believer in triangulation, just in the mold of Bill Clinton. And there's no, that's really quite depressing. Bill Clinton gave away the store when he was president with radical deregulation and what he called welfare reform, which ended the federal poverty program and the Telecommunications Act and so forth. And that was all done in the name of compromise with a compromise that benefited Wall Street in the case of the major economic deregulation. And what Obama is doing is positioning himself for the next election, and he's going to be the grand compromise. But he's compromising away the security of people who can't take the cut. You know, I mean, people on majority of people on Social Security are on the edge. You know, the most successful program that we have had in this country that lifted a whole category of people called seniors out of poverty was Social Security and Medicare. And by the way, everybody presents that as some kind of generational divide. The fact is, if you take away the security of the grandparents, then the grandchildren are going to be paying right now. What, are they going to let their grandparents starve? You know, everybody presents it as somehow, oh, we're coddling the seniors who paid for this their whole life,
right.
You know. But, you know, I remind people, you know, somebody, my mother lived with me until she was 88, you know, and that little Social Security check she got helped a little bit while I was in graduate school, you know, so I didn't have to pay all of her bills.
Mm.
You know, and this idea of pitting the young against the old and it won't be there for you, this is all, you know, he should have denounced that kind of rhetoric. Instead, he's embraced it.
And yet you think, Robert Scheer, that one way or another, before next Tuesday, they're going to come to some kind of agreement. And at this point, the only question is, how much of the store is Barack Obama going to get away? Is that pretty much the way you see it?
Well, first of all, the literal date of the second is only important if the credit rating agencies, which have no right to be rating anybody, these are the guys who told us the banks were doing great with their mortgage-backed securities and it was all honky-dory and everything during the great bubble. But anyway, if they use that August 2nd date as a way of changing the credit rating, that is a big deal. But in terms of the money, they have wiggle room. They do. And that's why Wall Street, you know, Sorkin points it out in the New York Times today, that's why Wall Street is not panicking. But any idea that these Republicans are not going to lift the debt ceiling ignores where they get their money from. These people are not anti-Wall Street. For all the populist rhetoric of the Tea Party and everything, they are being funded by the fat cats, by the big corporations, by rich people. And the Republican Party, if it's associated with destroying the credit rating of the United States, they'll be out of power for another 30 years or something. I mean, that would be incredible. And they are going to cave. But the question is whether Obama caves. So we got this crazy, you know, kabuki dance going on now. And what I'm afraid of is that this guy Obama, who, you know, I had a lot of hopes for, voted for and everything else, I'm afraid he's going to give away, you know, at a time, you know, when we really need more money spent on jobs, when we need more money to help people, you give money to people, poor people, working people, they're going to spend it. You give it to rich people, they just could salt it away somewhere.
Of course, and that's what they have been doing while they're making record profits and sitting all the money, and then you got the Republicans calling them job creators when they're nothing but. Listen, I got to take a quick break here. Speaking with Robert Scheer of TruthDig.com and everywhere else, author of The Great American Stick-Up. We're going to have more with him straight ahead, and then all your calls next hour at 877-520-1150. You're listening to Brad Friedman of BradBlog.com. In for Mike Malloy. Stay with us.
There must be some kind of way out of here. Say the Joker to the thief. There's too much confusion.
Welcome back to the Mike Malloy Show. 8 minutes before the hour, Brad Friedman of BradBlog.com in for Mike Malloy, who will return tomorrow, never fear. I'm speaking with Robert Scheer, veteran journalist and columnist and editor-in-chief of TruthDig.com and author of, among many other things, The Great American Stick-Up, How Reagan Republicans and Clinton Democrats Enriched Wall Street While Mugging Main Street. Okay, Bob, let me ask you a big picture question here. In your 30 years of covering this kind of nonsense, have you... you have a greater perspective than I have. You covered Watergate and everything else. Have you ever seen something quite as insane, as dysfunctional as this all has become, as dangerous it seems to me that the Republican Party has come? Does anything compare to this in either your time covering D.C. and politics, or even the history of the nation as a whole, compared to what it is, this mania that we are seeing now from a Republican Party who seems hell-bent on just burning down the nation?
Well, yeah, we've had periods of madness. Certainly in my time, we went to wars that shouldn't have been fought. You remember, there was this Vietnam War. We just had naval maneuvers with communist Vietnam to check communist China, which is holding our debt. We had a whole Cold War and wasted enormous wealth in the lives of a lot of people fighting some international communist enemy that didn't materialize. And the Republican Party under good old Joe McCarthy and everyone else whipped the flames of hysteria, and people got thrown in jail for speaking sense and you know, got their careers destroyed and everything else for daring to challenge that view. We had under Ronald Reagan the Reagan Revolution, which told us just let Wall Street greed go unchecked, and we're going to have paradise. And then, of course, Bill Clinton bought into that, much more so than the first President Bush. And we had this wild deregulation, which I think is what has really hobbled the American economy. We also had these thing of, you know, international trade negotiations where you don't care about jobs going overseas. Mm-hmm. You coddle these big corporations. I mean, no one's mentioning that. There's a news story just this morning in the Wall Street Journal, New York Times, about how multinational corporate profits are raging wild. They're doing great. They're sitting on $2 trillion of money they don't invest, and they're creating jobs in Asia. You know, they're creating jobs everywhere in the world except here. I think my problem with the Republican Party is that they have this faux populism, false populism. And the Tea Party people have been able to capture the legitimate rage out there of what happened to us, you know? What happened to us? And why did we give all this money to Wall Street? Why did we bail out Wall Street and the jobs aren't here? So now what they're doing is blaming Obama's puny stimulus program. Well, a good chunk of that was necessary, was useful, you know, extend unemployment, help the states, save auto jobs in Detroit. Is real people really against, bailing out General Motors, you know, and helping Chrysler? Come on. You know, let the Republicans be honest and say, no, we didn't want to extend unemployment. We don't want to save, cops and teachers' jobs. They should have done more of that.
There's a legitimate outrage, but it was, you know, they have hoaxed these people as to what they ought to be outraged about.
Right. Well, that's what they're about. out. They're dangerous in that they take funding from Wall Street, but they divert our attention away from the people of real power.
Robert Scheer, I've got just about a minute here left. I spoke with Robert Perry a few weeks ago. I interviewed him on the KPFK show, and he contends that basically the GOP is using CIA-like tactics to destroy the U.S. economy here the way they've done this abroad, and then you can roll in the U.S. can save the day. Do you share that opinion? Do you think that's what the GOP is doing?
What we have is this very dangerous tendency in a society to blame everybody but the people with power. You blame immigrants, you blame the unions, you blame, seniors, you look for scapegoats, and that's what's happened when other advanced economies have crumbled. And the Republicans, yes, you're right, they're playing a very dangerous game because they're feeding into a hysteria that points the finger at every place except the centers of power that got us into this mess and are perpetuating it.
Always good to talk to you, sir. Let's do this again more often, because you're a hell of an interesting guy. Thanks, Bob. I appreciate it. We'll see you on Wednesday. Yeah. Robert Scheer of TruthDig.com, author of The Great American Stick-Up, and a man who has been paying attention for a long time, knows what the hell he's talking about. All right, much more straight ahead. Your calls and a whole lot more in the third hour of the Mike Malloy Show. Brad Friedman of BradBlog.com in for Mike. Get on board now, 877-520-1150. I'm not going to be back after, tonight. Well, I mean, eventually. But anyway, now's the time to get in. Brad Friedman in for Malloy. Stay tuned. Welcome back to the Mike Malloy Show. 6 minutes after the hour, your friendly citizen investigative blogger, journalist, troublemaker, muckraker, all-around swell fellow, Brad Friedman from BradBlog.com, in for Mike, who will return tomorrow. And the nation rejoices. He'll be back from his Progressive Voices conference in Seattle at AM 1090, our fine affiliate up there. He'll be back tomorrow night. Until then, you got me for one more hour. Oh, stop whining about it. Our phone number is 877-520-1150, 877-520-1150. Oh, and for one more hour only, you can stop by the BradBlog.com chat room before it's gone. Until we next return. Like Brigadoon. Okay, let's see. What did I want to get in here? We're going to get to your calls in a moment. On the debt ceiling, on Oslo, on whatever you want. Whatever. These are your public airwaves. Use them or lose them. Desi Doyen is going to be joining us momentarily. I had a... amidst this whole debt ceiling fight... This fake debt ceiling fight, this terrorism, this Republican terrorism, frankly, holding the country hostage. The Democrats actually tried to step up and show some sort of courage. We'll have Desi explain this in a minute, because I know the rest. I was just outside getting some fresh air, and it's a beautiful night here in Los Angeles, and I'm reminded how it is not a beautiful night damn near everywhere else across the country, where it has been sweltering for the last 2 weeks under unbelievable temperatures. And well, I'm glad we're not out there, but I hope you guys are all doing okay, because I know what that's like. Born and raised in St. Louis, Missouri, and usually we travel around each summer and deal with those insane temperatures down in Texas. And so in any case, the Democrats today tried to do something that had to do with the environment. They tried to stand up. They tried to stick up for themselves or something, while nobody is going to be paying attention because all the debt ceiling fight is going on. So Desi Doyen, my co-host of the Green News Report, which you can hear on fine progressive radio stations around the country or via iTunes or at greennews.bradblog.com. She joins me now to tell me what was it that the Democrats were actually showing some spine in doing today in the Senate?
They were doing their best.
While no one was looking?
Right. The House Republicans, they had brought up, this is the spending bill for the Department of the Interior, the Environmental Protection Agency, and other agency bills that go with mainly interior spending and lots of environmental spending. So this overall bill, it cut spending by about 7%, but it would cut the EPA by 18%. And they also had it on all of these other riders, things like, you know, gutting enforcement of Clean Water and Clean Air Act provisions, you know, cutting all kinds of things that companies and cities actually rely on for clean water, for their businesses, and to actually run the infrastructure of the country.
What do we need clean water for? That's just more big government. I don't want clean water.
It's a crazy thing, I know. You'd think it wouldn't be that crazy.
Controversial.
But, so what the House Democrats did was that they attempted to have a little mini filibuster today. Now,
was in the House, not the Senate.
I'm sorry, did you say the Senate? Yeah, it's in the House.
How can they filibuster in the House?
Well, basically, they get up and they keep talking and talking and talking, and they all get 5 minutes, and they just keep getting up, and they do whatever the procedure is where they say, I want to erase the last thing, and it's a weird arcane procedures that they do, but they are then allowed. They're calling it a filibreather, is what the other folks were calling it.
That's right. I did see that name.
That was the hashtag you saw on Twitter. Filibreather, to basically get up and try to talk this through to make it impossible to vote on. There were, I think, let's see, New York Times Greenwire says 38 policy riders that would run the gamut from a one-year stay on new and proposed U.S. EPA rules for greenhouse gases and conventional pollutants to a moratorium on the listing of new species under that would be Endangered Species Act. So all kinds of stuff like this. And
they put a moratorium on putting anybody on any animals on the endangered
any new species. Animals on the endangered species list, you know, crazy stuff like that, that the Democrats are basically saying these are going to cause irreparable harm to both the economy and to public health.
And nonetheless, this is going to pass because it's the House. Eventually,
right. And
they'll
it's
be able
Republican
to pass it.
GOP. They're the majority. They'll get it passed, but it will not pass the Senate. And one hopes the president wouldn't sign it.
You never know
if
anymore,
it did get
do you?
Passed. Who
you
can
never
say
know.
These days?
Okay. And so that's what the Republicans were, I'm sorry, the Democrats were up to, again, while nobody was actually paying attention because everybody was talking about this debt nonsense.
Well, yeah, and in the middle of having this whole conversation on the House floor, this whole filibreather, you know, they also didn't have time to pass the FAA reauthorization bill. So the FAA had to furlough 4,000 people over the weekend.
Oh, did they?
Yeah. So they do have time for some things. They just don't have time for jobs or for things like the FAA.
Well, I was going to say, this was the jobs bill that the Republicans had promised. I know they didn't pass a bill to add jobs, but what they meant was they were going to kill jobs like 4,000 at the FAA, where we don't need those people, by the way.
Well, I mean, apparently we don't.
It's like clean water. I mean, what do you need people at the FAA for?
Companies must be allowed to dump in your backyard or else the economy will suffer. That's pretty much what they're saying.
I know. But as soon as you talk about dumping in the backyard, all kinds of things come
to mind.
Well,
I was going
to
use
just
another word, but they won't let me.
All right. Okay. Well, thanks for that update.
You can get more information on it at thinkprogress.org. Oh. They have a great roundup of what happened today.
Oh, and you know what? And let me ask you this.
And we'll have another roundup tomorrow.
And let me ask you this, because on the Green News Report tomorrow. Good. Because I've heard this around the clock now on Fox News. The government is banning light bulbs. The government is telling you what light bulbs you can have.
Yes, they are.
I saw it on Fox.
No. So just so people know, there is no light bulb ban. There is no incandescent light bulb ban. What it is new energy efficiency standards. For the first time in over 100 years, the government required the lighting industry to meet these new energy efficiency guidelines because, you know, light bulbs use all of the energy that a light bulb uses. It only uses 10% of that energy to generate light. The rest is wasted as heat. Mm-hmm. We don't have to do that anymore. We're smarter than that. And because of these new standards that were implemented and signed by George W. Bush with the bipartisan Congress in 2007, because
you mean this
wasn't
Barack Obama and the Democrats and their big government? This was George W. Bush was the one who put this into place, banning, but not really banning light bulbs?
There was no ban. It's just energy efficiency. And so if lighting companies want to still sell bulbs in the United States, they have to meet these new energy efficiency requirements. And they have. And for the first time since the light bulb was invented, these lighting companies actually innovated. And so when the Republicans in the House decided that they were going to try to repeal this ban or repeal the funding to enforce the ban, not the ban, the new rules, the new standards.
Aha, it's a ban.
Then they said, they said, no, please don't do that. We've just spent all this money innovating, and now you're going to undercut our innovations by making us go back to doing these other things.
So the industry doesn't even want them to undo it. So the Republicans pass a bill with George Bush, sign it, then the Republicans try to repeal the bill that they passed because, it's bad for, I don't know who it is bad for.
Well, it is certainly bad for all of the industries that rely on you paying as much as possible for energy.
Paying for energy. But the light bulb industry, they're all in favor of it. They don't want to repeal this. Okay.
They did a lot of innovation. It's great stuff. You should check it out.
All right. Thank you, Des.
You're welcome.
Smartly done. Now get back to those phones. They're ringing off the hook. Everybody's waiting to talk to you. Desi Doyen, my lovely co-host and the managing editor of Green News Report. Check out her and our report at greennews.bradblog.com. And we will get to your calls, as I said, in a moment, 877-520-1150. A couple of quick points here before we go to a break and then back to your calls. This is unbelievable. Up in Wisconsin, it's one of the states that is now passing these photo ID polling place restrictions to keep people from voting. And when I say people, I mean Democratic-leaning people. Because there is no voter fraud problem. Oh, yes, there is an election fraud problem, and you have serious concerns about that up in Waukesha County, Wisconsin, and across the rest of the state. As anybody knows who has followed my reporting at Brad Blog, but this photo ID bill meant to keep people from voting unless they go out and get a state sponsored photo ID or a couple of other IDs like a passport or a military ID. If you go to the University of Wisconsin, your ID won't work. You can't vote with that. That'll do no good. You got to go to the DMV, get yourself one of these photo IDs, which, by the way, if you know to ask for it, you can have it for free. If you know to ask for it. Otherwise, apparently, the policy is that they will charge you $28 for one of these free IDs. And we'll have some video on that, I think, tomorrow at Brad Blog on someone who documented that insane process. But at the same time, the governor, Scott Walker's administration, is working on finalizing a plan to close as many as 10 offices where people can obtain driver's licenses in order to expand hours elsewhere and come into compliance with new requirements that voters show photo IDs at the polls. Okay, so get this. If you want to vote, if you don't have a photo ID, you can go get one for free at the DMV if you know to ask for it for free. But as it turns out, in Democratic areas, reportedly, they are shutting DMVs down. They are limiting the hours. Meantime, they're expanding the hours for the DMV in Republican areas. I'm shocked. Who could have seen that coming? I could. We did. You're listening to Brad on The Malloy Show. Stay with us.
That awful sound. Bang, bang. My baby shot me down.
Well, I've been down so goddamn long that it looks like up to me. Well, I've been
thought that we'd play that to welcome Mr. Malloy back tomorrow night. I think he'd be quite happy about that. Brad Friedman of Bradblog.com in for Mike Malloy. One of the things I absolutely loved about the Norwegian Prime Minister who said, we will fight this with more democracy. Imagine if George W. Bush had said that after 9/11. Instead of whatever crap he did. Go shopping and we'll go to war.
877-520-1150. Got a lot of folks on hold. Thanks for holding on there for a long time. I'm going to try to get to as many folks as I can. Oh, and if you want to call the House, the Senate, the Capitol switchboard is 202-224-3121. As Obama has asked you to ring in with your opinion to your lawmaker, 202-224-3121. If you can get through, keep redialing. To get to us, it's 877-520-1150. Mark in San Francisco, you've been holding for a very long time. I appreciate it, sir. Thank you for that, and welcome to the Mike Malloy Show. What's on your mind?
Brad, democracy's under attack by the Republican Party.
Yes, it is.
And it's starting out with voter suppression, and then they want to cut as many jobs as they can to get unemployment as high as they can for the next election. I mean, these people will do anything. They don't care about America. They don't care about the suffering of the people of this country. I mean, it's just unbelievable to the extent they'll go to try to get power to destroy this country further. And, you know, Brad, when you look at it, where is this coming from? It's coming from the American Chamber of Commerce, ALEC, Grover Norquist, guys like Dick Armey and Karl Rove. Mm-hmm. These are the people that are just destroying democracy in this country.
Yeah, you know, I had asked Robert Scheer in the past hour if he'd had ever seen it as bad as it is now. And he said, yes, he had during McCarthy, during Vietnam. But one of the points I didn't get to make because we ran out of time against the clock was that while we might have had a bunch of crazy people there, what we did not have, it seems to me anyway, was the institutions that we have now. You just mentioned a couple, the American Legislative Council that creates all of these laws, these whatever you want, photo ID laws, anti-abortion laws, you know, union busting laws. They have that. They've got the media in place, this huge right-wing behemoth of a media that can turn on any number of any amount of fake information enough to send a country to war over a complete lie. And now the coup de grace, last year, the Supreme Court passes Citizens United so that now they can put unlimited amounts of money, corporate money, and they don't have to tell anybody about it into their campaigns. So as crazy as they have been in the past, there is now no one to stop them, nothing to do about it, and they can spend as much money on this nonsense as they want. So it's all about politics, and they would rather tear down this country, destroy the economy, put people out of work, even while they're claiming, you know, they want to put people back to work, a complete and utter lie, all to get back into power. And they think that people are going to buy it. And that's why one part of me says, you know what? Obama, call their bluff. Let them take the country over a cliff. Let them let the country see exactly who these people are.
You know, the stakes are too high, Brad. Not to fight back. I mean, there's so much at stake here. If these people get in power, they want to have permanent corporate welfare for the rich by lowering the tax rate and just destroying every program that we got and the middle class. That's what's at stake here. This isn't This isn't business as usual. This is an all-out assault.
Oh, listen, I agree. And what really irritates me is I don't even like the Democrats. I think they're a bunch of cowards, and they're not sticking up for you and for me and for the people of this country. You know, but the Republicans are so insane, are so frickin' out of their minds that, you know, you have no choice but to... Well, I don't know. Anyway, Mark, I appreciate your call. I gotta get to a break here, brother.
Okay. Well, anyway, we're still here to fight. So keep up the fight.
And you, my friend, really appreciate it. 877-520-1150. If you want to get in, we got a couple more lines open. I'm going to try to get to as many folks as I can. Oh, by the way, congratulations, New York. Equality, constitutional equal protection under the law comes to New York, and same-sex marriages are going through the roof there, apparently, as of Sunday, and bringing a lot of jobs. Those are your job creators. Brad, in for Malloy. Stay with us.
'Cause all I ever had, redemption song.
Well, they're building a gallows outside my cell, and I've got 25 minutes to go, and the whole town's waiting just to hear me yell. I got 24 minutes to go.
Actually, we got about 26 minutes to go here on the Mike Malloy Show, 34 minutes after the hour. 877-520-1150 if you'd like to get into this conversation before I'm done with this hour, and then I head back to bradblog.com and never to be heard from again. No, that's not true. I'll be back if they'll have me. Among the right-wing bloggers here in this country that was cited by this idiot terrorist mass murderer out there in Oslo was Pam Geller of Atlas Shrugs. And what he did was he named a whole bunch of right-wingers that he supported, that he kept citing their work, their blogs, their right-wing blogs. These people, anti-jihadists who have been, trying to scare you about Muslims and the jihad. Oh, they're coming for you, you know, for years. And this idiot bought into it. And he quoted from Ted Kaczynski, the Unabomber, and, basically Kaczynski's rants against leftists. This guy just replaced that with rants against jihadists. And of course, that didn't keep the Washington Post and the Wall Street Journal and all of those guys before and even after this came out from saying, oh, this was radical Muslims who were behind this massacre in Norway. Of course, it wasn't. And then when they were proven wrong, they said, well, clearly these radical right wingers were inspired by Al-Qaeda. They were inspired by the Muslims. Oh, my God. Remember the report that came out about the radical right-wingers? That the radical right-wingers got so upset about? It was talking about guys exactly like this idiot in Norway who just, you know, killed whatever it is now, 76, 78 people. But Andrew Breitbart and his pals were just outraged by it. Radical extremists like us don't kill people. Muslims do. Let's get some calls. 877-520-1150 as the world burns. Well, let's see. On the topic here, Joy in Santa Cruz. Hey, Joy. Welcome. Welcome back to the Mike Malloy Show.
Hello. How are you?
I'm okay. Oh, I'm just irritated and everything else. But you have a comment. What is your comment?
I do, but before that, I just want to tell Des, I think it's Fukushima.
What did she say?
She said she wasn't sure how to pronounce it.
Oh, well, we think it's Fukushima. Fukushima Daiichi.
Yeah, Fukushima.
Anyway, because okay. I'm really short on time. I got all these callers, so what's on your mind, Joey?
Well, I'm calling about Frank Schaefer's article, Christian Jihad, Why Should We Worry About Right-Wing Terror Attacks Like Norway's in the U.S.?
Oh, good. I haven't read that, but Frank Schaefer has written many times at bradblog.com. He's a former Christian right-winger, grew up. He and his father, you know, they wrote books on the right wing, as fundamentalists. And now Frank Schaefer has come out against it to say, hey, all these Christian right-wingers are out of their frickin' minds.
That's what he's basically saying in here, and apparently this crazy guy, which I won't say his name because I don't want to give him any credit.
Yeah,
for
notice
anything,
I haven't said it either. Yeah,
is that he was on a lot of the right wing blogs in the U.S. He
yeah.
was on a lot of the Tea Party blogs.
Yes, he was inspired by them.
He was very inspired by them, and he's a complete nut job. And this really bothers me because I'm a quarter Norwegian. My grandmother came from Oslo.
Right.
And this just doesn't happen in a country like Norway normally.
It does now.
But it's being inspired by us, which is really sickening.
Yep. Yep. There's a lot of hate going on, Joy, and our hate is spreading. Hey, listen, I got to move along. Always good to hear from you. Hope you're doing well up there, though.
Oh, I'm doing fine. We still have a big rock slide, though.
Oh, boy. Well, be careful of that. Thanks, Joy. We'll talk to you soon.
All right. Bye.
All right. 877-520-1150. Anything you want to talk about, whatever's on your mind, these are your public airwaves. Don't let anybody else tell you otherwise. Your public airwaves. Use them
before you lose them more than you already have. And by the way, we got a, let's see, Kevin said earlier that called in and left a message to say that some of the congressional mailboxes are full. But he says, keep calling tomorrow to the switchboard, 202-224-3121. 202-224-3121 to give your opinion. The president has asked for it. Call your congressperson and give them your opinion on this debt ceiling. And if you want a balanced approach, or if you want the Republican approach now, what has become the Republican approach, which is all spending cuts, no revenue increases whatsoever. The oil companies get to keep their subsidies. The corporate jet owners get to keep their tax breaks they get for having corporate jets. All the rich people get to keep all of their Bush tax cuts forever. That's the other plan. So call your congressperson. Let them know what you want. Or call us, 877-520-1150. Let's go to Dave in San Francisco. Hey, David, welcome to the Mike Malloy Show, sir.
Hey, how are you, Brad?
I'm hanging in.
I was interested in Cantor's investments. I don't know if you caught the Salon.com article of almost a month ago.
Yeah.
I think it's called Cantor's Conflicts of Interest, glaring conflict of interest. But in it, it just flat out describes how Eric Cantor has invested in a bond fund which specifically is intending to short America.
Yeah, short selling America. Yep.
Right, and the very idea. I mean, I'm profoundly amazed that the that the Security Exchange Commission would even allow such a bond fund to exist. You know, if you were living in
David, that's a financial tool. That's what makes our country great, is our innovations in the finance industry, where we can figure out how to make money on anything, winning or losing. It's a tool. That's all it is, David.
Yeah. So they're all tools.
They are tools.
Yeah. So in this case, you know, the idea that the Security Exchange Commission would give the, you know, the license to a pack of termites to undermine America, and then that would be a business structure. You know, that's pretty amazing in its own right. And the idea that Obama not only hasn't shut down such an operation, but that he's allowed Eric Cantor to take part in these negotiations for a full month.
Yeah.
Just, I mean, I'm amazed. Obama at least has some district attorneys, U.S. district attorneys. He's got the Security Exchange Commission. He's got any number of different oversight and enforcement arms that he can work with. And no matter what Eric Cantor has to say about it, the idea, I call up radio talk shows all the time. I've called up almost every radio talk show in Eric Cantor's district and specifically raised this. And, you know, the common mealy-mouthed answer is, oh, what's $15,000? But I saw somebody do a projection of the $15,000 that Eric Cantor would stand to that $15,000 could turn into $500,000 if America defaulted, so to speak. And, they, you know, these mealy-mouthed answers were saying, oh, well, look, Eric Cantor's got a retirement package that's worth $380,000 through the Congress, and so what's $15,000? Well, $500,000 turns into a tidy sum.
Were they right? Were they right-wing shows you happen to be calling, by any chance, David?
Virtually every one of them, yeah.
Yeah, go figure.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, if you
and they were cool with it. Yeah.
Yeah. If you ever watch C-SPAN and you watch the White House press press conferences, there's one of the weirder guys out there. It's a guy named Leskin Solving.
Yes. And, yes. Les. I know Les. Yes.
I've talked to him twice about it.
Okay. Yeah. And he, you know, he doesn't care. Remember, he was the guy that they go to, that Bush used to go to after Jeff Gannon left the right. They would just go to Leskin Solving to you know, to save
ramble
him with
about
some right wing madness, some right right-wing insanity question.
Yeah.
Thanks for doing that, for getting out there and for using your airways to let people know, particularly on the right-wing show. And where are all the right-wingers? They're supposed to call me. You know, after tonight, there's no more Flying Monkeys on the Mike Malloy show. So if you Flying Monkeys want to get in now, I'd love to hear from you, but you're going to have to really, really work quick because we're coming up against the top of the hour.
Don't forget to say your new phone number because, you know, I think they're trying to call Malloy's number, and you got to go to Brad Blog to get the new phone number.
Okay, 877-520-1150. Don't bother the Malloys, especially if you're a right-wing flying monkey. They don't want to hear from you there. All right. Hey, thanks, David. I appreciate the call, brother.
Good week.
Thank you. You too. Let's go to Sonia in San Anselmo. Wait a minute. Where am I here? There we go. San Anselmo, Sonia. California. Welcome, Sonia, to the Mike Malloy Show.
Hi, how are you?
I'm okay. How are you?
Good. I heard that man call in looking for numbers to call to Congress.
Right.
And he said he was blind.
Yes.
And he was very concerned.
Yes.
And then you said that the lines to Congress were becoming full.
Right.
And so I would encourage people to go to the Congress people's districts, and they usually have 4 or 5 offices. Go get them.
Good point. Call the local numbers.
Call their local numbers.
Call their local offices, which you can also get usually on their website.
Yes.
But and listen, and call tomorrow. I after the president goes on and makes a speech and says, "Hey, call Congress." You know, I understand the phones are probably going to get busy, but they're not going to stay that way.
Call them every which way you can.
So, yeah, call them. Call them. And I don't even care what you tell them. You know what? Call them. Tell them whatever you want. But tell them. Make some noise. Raise some hell. Thanks, Sonia. You make a good point. Call the local offices if you can't get through to the D.C. office. Really appreciate it, Sonia. All right, let me get to Mike in Westminster, South Carolina. Hey, Mike, welcome to the Mike Malloy Show.
Hey, Brad. Look, I just got to tell you, I don't know that calling these people is a good idea.
No?
Because it's encouraging them to make a deal.
Yeah.
Okay? And if we do that, we're going to lose.
Okay.
I mean, Obama has been dealing disingenuously with people ever since he got in office.
Right.
And if you went back and remember in the October before, they passed the other legislation, Boehner had already agreed that he would, let the tax cuts for the rich expire.
Right.
And Obama backed off of that. So what we've got here is a president who's doing kabuki theater and with the cap and balance act. That's what I call it, an act, because it's all theater.
Right.
But I'm saying we might be shooting ourselves in the foot to call these congressmen and tell them to make a deal.
What would you like to see happen? And very quickly here, Mike, because I got to get to a break.
I'd actually like to see Obama have a spine and invoke the 14th Amendment and just say, hey, we're going to pay our bills.
We're going to pay them. All right. Yeah,
that's what I like to see him do.
I like to see that too.
Of course, he's not going to do it, but because he's such a wuss.
Yes, he is. Thanks, Mike. I appreciate your call, brother. All right, you bet. You too. 877-520-1150. We're going to come back with our last segment. Try to get through everyone here on the board here. 877-520-1150 if you'd like to get through. And please see, I had all this stuff that I had hoped to do for the last 3 days, and they've screwed it all up with their stupid kabuki theater in Congress. I didn't get to tell you about the Tea Party convention who won't pay their bills at the casino where they canceled their convention last year. So I didn't get to tell you about the new conspiracy that the Palinistas, anyway, next time I'm on, or come by bradblog.com, where you'll want to come to catch the big new exclusive coming soon. You'll see. Brad Friedman in for Mike Malloy. One more segment straight ahead.
Let's say goodbye with a smile, dear, just for a while, dear, we must part. Don't let this parting upset you, I'll not forget you, sweetheart.
That's true, I won't.
We'll meet again. don't know where, don't know when, but I know we'll meet again some sunny day.
We will indeed. My thanks tonight to my guests, John Amato of Crooks and Liars and Robert Scheer of TruthDig.com. If you missed any portion of the program tonight, you can download the Bradcast at bradblog.com late tonight. Although, if I were you, I'd get a subscription to the Mike Malloy podcast and support progressive radio on your public airwaves. My thanks also to engineer Tony Sorrentino, the greatest engineer in the world, or at least in this room. Thank you, sir. Good music as ever. And to producer Desi Doyen. And, of course, our friends For Earth and Dale monitoring in the bradblog.com chat room. Thanks, guys. Really appreciate it. And finally, my thanks to Mike and Kathy Malloy, who will return tomorrow night right here on this fine radio station. If you're listening via MikeMalloy.com, please stay tuned for Head On with Bob Kincaid. And, of course, you can find me, Twitter me, shout at me at the Brad Blog on Twitter or get me on bradblog.com. Let's go very quick. We're going to fly through as many of these as we can in a very short time. So make your questions brief and to the point if you don't mind. Sarah in Oakland, California. Welcome to the Mike Malloy Show, Sarah. What's up?
Hi, Brad. This is Snark in the Dark.
Snark in the Dark. How are you?
Yeah, we're talking about the defiance of mathematics in the realm of politics and the connection. The chronic debt crises validate my belief that there is nothing so interminable that it cannot be prolonged. The group of six was irrelevated to a group of seven, so I want to know who will be casting the tie-breaking vote. Now, I know. How can there be a tie to break? Well, yes, of course. Seven is an odd number. But so is that congressman known for quoting Led Zeppelin on the record. 14 is an even number. And since politicians have been known to talk out of both sides of their mouths, we're back where we non-started. So I'd like to see something happen with all of this. And I feel so bad before you know it, Boehner's going to be shedding 99 more tears at the very next drop of a stalemate. That's it for the snark tonight.
Thanks for the snark.
For having me.
Thanks. I appreciate the snark, Sarah. I'm going to try to get to another call here as quick as I can. Tracy in L.A. Oh, is that Tracy, lady cab driver? Tracy?
Yes, it is. Brad is lady cab driver.
Hey, Tracy, you never get enough time. Sorry about that. What's on your mind?
It's okay. No.
All right, go.
Just want to talk about the master plan that, you know, get rid of education, get rid of voters, get rid of the unions, and what do we have? A permanent underclass.
Yep, that's exactly what is going on. That is the plan. The only question is when will the right-wingers figure it out, the people who are enabling these corporatist right-wingers. Thanks, Tracy. Let me get to another call here. I do appreciate it. And speaking of right-wingers and enabling them, James in Arizona. Hey, brother, what's on your mind? Really quick.
Okay, I'm in the 36% tax bracket, and how much more do I have to pay for those who are down there? In
do you
the
make more than do you make rent? Do you make more than $250,000 a year?
It doesn't matter.
Do you make more than $250,000 a year, sir?
Damn it, no.
Then you won't have to pay another cent, and yet you can help.
So,
well, you will someday, and when you do, you'll probably have to pay another $200 a year. Support this country. And it's still your country. Support it, James. Stand by it.
Two percent pay more.
What?
Have those people who are down there on the 2% bracket pay more.
That's what they're trying to do. That's the whole point. That's why they want to do away with the Bush tax cuts. All right, Dale, you have exactly 15 seconds, brother. What's on your mind? Oh, there we go. Dale in Los Angeles. Quick, what's on your mind?
Yeah, I'm going to let you know right now they're not going to raise the debt ceiling. This is not politics. This is all race.
Okay.
And I guarantee you we'll be talking about that on August 2nd.
All right, yeah, brother. I appreciate it. I hope you're wrong. Hey, I really appreciate the last few days, as usual, you Malloyalists welcoming me here until Mike is back, which he will be tomorrow night. Never fear. You will be able to find me at bradblog.com. I also do a show on Wednesdays, a little half-hour show on Pacifica Radio, Wednesdays 3:30. Stop by bradblog.com for more information on that. Otherwise, we'll see you when we see you, unless nobody sees anybody after August 2nd. Good luck, America. I'm Brad Friedman. Keep it lit.